Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Every time someone plays the album, it takes them one step further away from God and Christianity.
What planet are you from?
Oh, California.
Marilyn Manson took rock music, turned it into a weapon, and used it to assault America's hypocrisy.
We will no longer be oppressed by the fascism of Christianity.
I've always identified with the character of Lucifer in the Bible.
For more than a decade, he was considered a national threat.
The LA County Sheriff's Department is investigating rock star Marilyn Manson.
Blamed for pretty much anything from culture decay to school shootings.
I think that I've been blamed for about 36 school shootings.
Never before in the history of this country have so many corrupting influences descended upon children at one time.
It represents what society is scared of.
This is the story of how a pale kid, bullied and angry, became the last rock star who truly terrified America.
We're here to worship Satan.
The end of civilization as we know it is taking place at the hands of Marilyn Manson.
This is the story of Marilyn Manson. Brian Hugh Warner, better known as Marilyn Manson, was born in 1969 in Canton, Ohio. His mom, Barbara, was a neurotic church lady who treated Sunday service like a hostage situation. She dragged Brian to church every week, whether he liked it or not. His dad, Hugh, was a hardened Vietnam veteran who spent his teenage years dumping poison on jungles and bodies, spraying Agent Orange in the jungles at 17, then came home to sell furniture like nothing happened. As Brian was growing up, his dad was around physically but checked out emotionally. His mom, meanwhile, smothered him. She was convinced he was sickly, fragile, allergic to basically life itself, even though doctors kept telling her that he was perfectly healthy. The tension between those two parents, with religion and paranoia on one side and war and trauma on the other, shaped Brian's psychology early on.
A country where parents raise their kids to grow up feeling guilty and ashamed for not being like them with Christian morality. And these kids need a way to react against it. You're going to have a bunch of angry kids.
Brian's mom put him in Heritage Christian School, and the place was intense. Imagine being a kid and hearing about hell and the end of the world every single day.
Well, growing up in a private Christian school, I had to wear a uniform and I had to have my hair cut a certain length, and I wasn't allowed to listen to heavy metal music, and I was very afraid of the end of the world because it was a lot of doom and gloom being preached there.
But his school experience shows how fear-based education often backfires.
I've always identified with the character of Lucifer in the Bible.
On Sundays, church leaders often gave warnings about music, claiming that Satan hid messages in rock songs. For Brian, the warnings worked in reverse. In fact, he grew more and more fascinated both with rock music and with the devil.
All the bands that I ended up listening to, David Bowie and Black Sabbath and Kiss and things like that, I had heard about all of them through my church because I was told this is what I wasn't supposed to listen to, so I went out and bought it immediately.
He didn't fit in with the clean-cut Christian kids. He wasn't into sports, he loved rock and horror movies, and he had an artistic side that set him apart. That made him a target.
I always had my doubt, but there was one point where I wanted to fit in because I was so sick of everyone looking at me like, you know, I was wrong because I liked rock music, or I was wrong because, you know, I wasn't born again. So I wanted to give in, and then when I did, I tried, I was kind of shut down, and it just, I guess, hurt me even more. So I didn't want to give anymore. Instead, I wanted to create my own set of standards and let people fit into those instead of trying to fit into theirs.
Pain has a way of forcing creativity out of you. For Brian, being the freak at school didn't kill his spirit. If anything, it pushed him further into exploring his artistic side. If the world wouldn't accept him, he'd build his...
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam. A charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Zone.
Being exposed to stuff like that at an early age and private Christian school, I just always felt the need to say something, whether I was making a rude comment in class. I think that just translated into music. I've always felt a need to entertain people, so I guess to make use of all my energy.
Everyone sees me as this bad person because of what I'm saying, but what I'm saying is in everyone. It's the part of you that no longer has hope in mankind, and you realize that, you know, you are the only thing you can believe in. That's really the bottom line.
The family dynamic at home added more complexity. Brian often stayed with his grandparents, and it was there that he stumbled on something unsettling. His grandfather kept boxes of adult magazines and films hidden in the basement, and it wasn't the typical stuff you might expect. This was stranger, more disturbing content we can't really go into detail about on YouTube. What it revealed to Brian was important. Even in his own family, there were hidden worlds no one ever acknowledged.
What do you think, like going back into your childhood, like can you think of any one key event that sort of started the whole process of Brian Warner to what ended up becoming Marilyn Manson?
Well, I guess I started out as a voyeur with my grandfather, who was a weird character that used to dress up in like women's lingerie, and he had a strange collection of pornography.
I think it made
me grow up.
But
your grandfather did shocking things. He was into serious hardcore pornography. And yeah. As a child, you stumbled upon this in the basement. That's a very traumatic thing for a child.
As a kid, I think I looked at him the way that my family probably still looks at him, as an aberration, as a freak, something that doesn't make sense. But after experiencing what I've gone through over the past few years, the way that the world looks at me, I think now I have more in common with my grandfather than with anyone else, because I'm treated the same way.
The irony is thick. Barbara wanted to protect Brian from corruption, yet the strict sermons and the family's hidden dysfunction shaped him in the opposite direction. They played a role in creating the very version of him she was trying to avoid. By 10th grade, even his parents realized that Christian boot camp was frying his brain. So they pulled him out and dropped him in public school. And suddenly it was like oxygen after years of suffocation. Now he could wear the black t-shirts, blast the music, and hang with kids who didn't think Slayer was Satan incarnate. In 1989, Brian crossed paths with guitarist Scott Puteski at a club in Fort Lauderdale. They shared a love for aggressive music and a taste for dark, offensive humor. That connection sparked an idea: create a band that was as much performance art as it was music.
Well, originally we started out in the beginning of 1990. I'm Daisy, just Marilyn and myself, making music on our own, having fun with it, and we decided to put a band together and spread lots of mystery and propaganda.
Marilyn, Mark, Mace, and the Spooky Kids, Manson.
Brian adopted the name Marilyn Manson, a deliberate contrast combining Marilyn Monroe with Charles Manson. It was a statement on American culture's obsession with both glamour and violence, but it was also about reconciliation of the opposites.
And you call yourselves, you're Marilyn Manson because?
Because that's my name.
Twiggy? Uh-huh. And Madonna Wayne Gacy?
Yes.
You're not going to help us understand the...
You want to understand where the name came
from?
Yeah. I've always watched talk shows. I haven't got to watch yours very often, though. I watch more of the trashier ones, but I found that Marilyn Monroe and Charles Manson, about 5 years ago when I thought of this, were the two most memorable people from the 60s. I thought it was interesting that things like talk shows put them on the same kind of celebrity status. And I thought that dichotomy of positive and negative.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Putting those two names together represented what I had to say and what I was about.
Their group, Marilyn Manson and the Spooky Kids, was social commentary turned into theater.
Well, I want them to take us seriously, but to have fun at the same time.
They deliberately pushed limits, whether it was through lyrics, visuals, or stage antics. The band wanted to challenge what audiences thought was acceptable.
Well, I think the scariest thing about me is that there are different sides to what I do. You know, that, you know, I'm sure if there were a devil and you were to meet him, he'd be quite charming, I'm sure. I don't think he would, you know, set you on fire right there on the spot.
Fascism doesn't always wear jackboots.
Lingerie-clad musicians, freakish outfits, animal guts scattered on the floor. They looked less like rock concerts and more like you would picture a party hosted by Aleister Crowley. Manson prowled the stage like a cult leader testing the audience to see how far he could push the spectacle before people snapped.
We were kind of testing the boundaries to see what we could get away with, so our shows were just more over the top than they were even musical, and I think we had a lot of illegal things going on, drug use and oral sex and children in cages and things like that.
On stage.
Word spread fast, and soon every club they played was packed with kids and misfits wanting to see with their eyes this obscene freak show.
I think the best thing that could happen is if parents are afraid of me, they will take more time to raise their children to be more intelligent so that they can decide whether or not and how music, art, and film is going to affect their lives.
But Manson wasn't using shock to hide lack of talent. The band actually had the music to back up their spectacle. So in 1990, they dropped the Raw Boned Psalms, a messy demo tape packed with industrial noise and punk rock energy. Manson's voice swung from snarling demon to theatrical ringmaster, like he was dragging the audience through a circus from hell. For a local band, their ambition was huge, so it should be no surprise that by 1993, they had caught the ear of Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails, who signed them to his own label, Nothing Records.
I'd met Trent a long time ago, and I think it was right around the same time the band was forming, and he just kept in touch. We'd always been friends, and called me up and told me that he was at the Sharon Tate house when he first moved in there, and he'd known that, you know, I was always interested in seeing that place, so I went out there and started talking about making a record. And, you know, he really was the only person at the time that would support what we were doing, so.
Right.
Yeah.
That's cool that he did.
At the time, signing with Trent's label looked like a big career break, but that was actually the beginning of Manson's full-on war against America's morals and hypocrisy. However, at the time, no one could predict how brutal this battle would be.
Nine Inch Nails is their own paparazzi.
The good thing is that Trent, being an artist, you know, respects the artist's point of view. So it's, he happens to be the only person in the music industry that I trust, and they gave us the opportunity to put out our record completely raw and unexpurgated, and we didn't have to censor ourselves, and that was the most important thing, because it's not worth it for me to do this unless we do it the way that I want to do it.
And he sees that, you know.
Marilyn Manson's first album, Portrait of an American Family, came out in 1994. At first glance, it might have looked like it was just another random rock album, but it was less a debut album and more a middle finger to the country that raised him.
I've found that a lot of people from other countries understand our music more than some people in America, because when you're involved in America and you're a part of it, it's hard to look at it from an objective point of view. And I'm looking at it from an objective point of view, and I'm seeing how America raises children to, you know, be ashamed for who they are, and raises kids to feel guilty for being individuals, and how America's constantly trying to keep you from thinking for yourself, you know.
Produced by Trent Reznor, the record painted an ugly, exaggerated picture of American life. Almost like looking into a cracked mirror.
You know, I think America's a screwed up place, but at the same time, I think that's what makes it great.
Get Your Gun was based on a real event where a doctor who provided abortions was murdered by a man claiming to be pro-life. Nothing screams hypocrisy louder than killing in the name of saving lives. And Manson loved to rub America's nose in it.
I think that there's a way for me to examine what's going on in the world, things that I see around me. And I tell people what I think about it. I tell them directly. A lot of people are afraid to say what's on their mind. But I don't think I ever encourage people to do things that hurt themselves or hurt others. I think if anything, I encourage people to be creative, to express themselves.
Lunchbox went even more personal, ripped from his own childhood, where he swung a metal lunchbox at bullies just to survive school.
In your song Lunchbox, you mentioned that when you grow up, you want to be a big rock and roll star so nobody will mess with you. And I was just wondering, now that you are a big rock and roll star, do you find that people are more reluctant to mess with you?
No, actually, I think you just brought up an ironic point that I didn't realize, is that people mess with me more now that I'm a rock star. So I failed, and I've made a big backfire mistake.
The record didn't hit the top of the charts, but it burned itself into a cult fan base. Decades later, Rolling Stone stamped it as one of heavy metal's greatest.
I think that record said what I wanted to say, but it didn't musically do what I wanted to do, so it fell short a little bit.
The real turning point came in 1995 with the release of Smells Like Children. It was an EP, not even a full album, but it had one track that changed everything. A cover of Eurythmics' Sweet Dreams.
I think Smells Like Children's more subtle than our first record. You know, people were expecting something very shocking, and for me, something shocking was to do a cover of Sweet Dreams. It's not what anyone would have wanted me to do.
Manson warped the song, making it sound unsettling, like something familiar turned inside out.
Now, this is a new tour for the Smells Like Children EP album that you got out. It's actually a little bit longer than an EP. It's got a lot of remixes, and I like the first song a lot, the most to me on it. Now, you did a rhythmic song on there, Sweet Dreams.
I was always into the lyrics, and I thought a lot of people hadn't really listened to what it had to say because it was a dance song.
Right.
And I just like the idea of use and abuse that I was talking about. I could really relate to that. So I wanted to redo the song the way that I saw it, to share that with people.
Then came the music video. Manson, in a wedding gown and heavy makeup, appeared in surreal and disturbing scenes, like cutting himself in a tutu or riding on a pig. It was so bizarre, MTV couldn't resist. They played it nonstop. Suddenly, Manson had a hit. Years later, Billboard even named it the scariest music video of all time.
When Sweet Dreams came out on the radio, you'd been playing the song for like 2 years prior in the concert.
Yeah.
And you say that it was the fans who demanded that song on the radio. And I think, and I ask you this, what, do you think that that was like the bridge between sort of the old Marilyn Manson fans, or the people who knew you from the NIN tour, and sort of this whole new realm of commercial radio and pop culture and all of these things you're ready to sort of infiltrate? Talk about that.
Yeah, I think Sweet Dreams was definitely kind of a turning point, because really in that period, not a lot of people had faith in what we were doing. I think a lot of people wanted to give up hope on Marilyn Manson because it was too extreme for them. And I ended up having the idea to do the video for Sweet Dreams, and I'm glad that we did it. I didn't think it was selling out. I thought it was the perfect ironic thing to do, and I think to me it made a lot of sense.
Teenagers ate it up. Parents were horrified.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Extra Value Meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
Exactly the reaction Manson wanted.
It's a girl! I am the anti-flag unfurled!
Then came 1996, and Manson went all in. He called himself the Antichrist Superstar, and that became also the title of his second album. This album didn't necessarily break new ground musically, but it stood out because nothing else sounded quite like it when it dropped. The songs are instantly catchy, the references to different styles keep it fresh, and the record flows like one long, twisted story. Now here's what's interesting. Compared to the underground death and black metal scenes, Manson was actually pretty tame. But those bands weren't chasing mainstream attention. They didn't want to be on the radio or MTV. Manson did. He leaned into fame, and you can see it right in the album title, Antichrist Superstar. The name itself was a parody. Manson took Andrew Lloyd Webber's Jesus Christ Superstar and flipped it upside down. It was also a direct jab at grunge. While Nirvana pretended they hated attention, Manson craved it and built an empire out of shock. Making this album, however, was hell. The atmosphere was brutal. Everyone was on eggshells, and pretty much having a nervous breakdown because of Manson's perfectionism and Trent's lack of patience.
What's it like to work with Trent Reznor?
It'd probably be more interesting to ask him what it's like to work with us.
But that's exactly why the record hits so hard. Every ounce of hate, every slam door, every meltdown was carved into the music. Out of sheer chaos and misery, they actually forged one of the greatest rock albums of all time.
I think I always get creatively frustrated. That's part of anybody's process of making things. If you were happy doing what you do all the time, I don't think anything great would come out of it.
An album that kind of felt like a Nazi rally mixed with a satanic ritual. Irresponsible Hate Anthem opened with an air raid siren before Manson screamed about torching the entire system. Then came The Beautiful People, a pounding jackboot march that mocked America's obsession with beauty and conformity.
The fascist idea of beauty that kind of exists on television, the idea that if you don't buy the right type of toothpaste or a clear cell, or you're not driving a Lexus, then you're not going to be accepted. So it was kind of like a response to that. So it's really, it's kind of a twofold. You can look at it either way. The Beautiful People are the people that are controlling that, or you can, you know, be your own idea of beauty, which isn't theirs.
The album debuted at number 3 on Billboard and spread like a virus. But its real success was cultural. To Christian conservatives, Manson was no longer just a shock rocker. He truly was the Antichrist in the flesh.
Every time someone plays the album, it takes them one step further away from the old way of thinking, of believing in God and Christianity. But it's not necessarily an apocalypse, a destruction of the world like people have always seen it. I think it's killing off your old way of thinking.
We're here to worship Satan. Satan's God!
On tour, he strutted in Nazi-styled uniforms, towering on fake stilts with lipstick smeared like a corpse, and barked sermons from a pulpit while ripping pages out of the Bible. Kids screamed with him while Christian parents obviously clutched their pearls in horror.
It represents what society is scared of.
I was wondering, what do you think about how parents react to your music?
I think it's typical. I mean, just like their parents reacted to Elvis and the Beatles and James Brown or whoever else. I think it would be great if parents didn't understand music, that they took the time to sit with their kids and talk about it, just like you would a history book or the Bible or a painting or whatever it's going to be. You know, there's more to be learned that way than just fighting with them.
Churches held emergency meetings about the Marilyn Manson problem. Parents groups picketed outside arenas. Even politicians got involved.
Actually, everywhere you go, you're causing a huge controversy, religious, political. You've got President Clinton calling you evil. What do you think about that?
I think the way that they react kind of proves my point a lot of times, because I'm also questioning their hypocrisy and their behavior. And for Clinton to say something about me, obviously, we've seen, you know, what his behavior is. If someone wants to look like a good guy, they have to point out who the bad guy is. So often I get to be the bad guy. But I think most of the time it's that person wanting to better their career or to get their name in the paper alongside mine. I think they care less about the youth than I do.
Whether people loved him, hated him, or were terrified of him, everyone was suddenly paying attention.
What do your mom and dad think of this?
They're big fans now. I don't think they always were, but they see that I enjoy what I do. I think that's what they want more than anything.
When Marilyn Manson took Antichrist Superstar on the road in 1997, the backlash was immediate. The Dead to the World tour was met with protests across the country.
I will praise the Lord.
Outside concert halls, church groups held prayer vigils while others waved signs calling him the devil.
The irony is that a lot of religious people, you know, despise what I do, but I think that I've found myself having a lot in common with a person like Jesus. To me, he was, in some ways, the blueprint for the rock star icon. You know, he was someone who was misunderstood and had a vision of the world he wanted to show to people, and he became an image of suffering that people have held up and worn on their necks, just like kids will hold up and wear concert t-shirts these days. So in a strange way, Jesus kind of created the blueprint for celebrity.
At the same time, rumors began spreading about what supposedly happened during the shows. You know, satanic rituals, animal sacrifices, self-harm, and worse. Most of the claims were obviously exaggerated, but fear spreads faster than truth.
I'm Kurt Loder here at Oklahoma City, where the end of civilization as we know it is taking place at the hands of Marilyn Manson.
In some communities, especially in the Bible Belt, the panic turned into policy. Certain towns tried to block him from performing. Florida schools warned students they could be expelled if they went. And in South Carolina, officials actually paid him $40,000 not to appear.
People, their impression of you is many people like you, of course, that's your fan base. Other people are reviled and horrified by you and what you supposedly stand for. Is that a fair assessment of things?
Well, I've always measured success not only by the amount of people that love you, but the ones that hate you, too.
Right.
'Cause if you do something that everybody loves, it's not really worth too
right.
much.
And do you like to get people upset? Is that part of what fuels you?
I like to provoke people so they think. You know, I think that's a healthy part of entertainment.
Uh-huh.
That you don't get too much from the Spice Girls.
Needless to say, Manson loved the chaos, and when towns threatened bans or parents screamed about boycotts, it only made him bigger.
As the Beatles were bigger than Jesus, Marilyn Manson is bigger than Satan.
For Manson, outrage wasn't a side effect. It was the mission. And by 1998, he was sitting on top of both fame and infamy. With a new album coming out, everyone expected him to crank the Antichrist act to new extremes, but instead, he pivoted hard. Mechanical Animals introduced a brand new monster, a pale androgynous alien who looked like Ziggy Stardust after a chemical spill.
What planet are you from?
Oh.
No, that's not.
Come on.
California. You really
California.
Do
And so how did you come up with this androgynous creature that you're personifying and putting out there?
I guess it's just the way I've always seen myself on the inside. I think society wants us to be one thing, and I've always felt that to be too limiting.
Gone were the Nazi uniforms and...
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Bible-ripping theatrics. Now Manson was a glitter-drenched alien rock god, strutting in platform boots and skin-tight latex. It was shocking in a different way. Not satanic, but repulsive and seductive at the same time, bending gender and identity into something America wasn't ready for.
Marilyn comes out, and you know, everyone's seen the picture of the new cover of your album.
Yeah.
Mechanical Animals. And Marilyn's in, that's great stuff, man. I don't know where you got the idea for that, but you got breasts and like no vagina, but it kind of looks like you got a vagina.
Well, you know what the problem is? Everybody hated me so much last year. As you can feel the pain.
Yeah, sure do.
But everyone loves
Who hates?
Everyone loves
Say breasts.
Everyone loves
breasts. Or else I'll be fined $1 million.
Everyone loves breasts.
Right.
So,
you
I get breasts, now everyone loves me.
You know, I think if Antichrist Superstar was pretty much about a personal apocalypse and looking for to pay back the world, you know, for the way I felt I was treated, this record is almost...
What do you mean when you say the way that you feel you're treated?
Well, I just think, you know, growing up, I never felt like anyone believed in me. And so I think this record now is almost having sympathy for the world.
Well, if you say it was hard growing up, then...
The music shifted too, ditching the grinding industrial metal for glossy, spaced-out glam rock. The lead single, The Dope Show, openly mocked the shallow glamour of Hollywood's drug culture, equal parts seductive and sinister. And upon release, Mechanical Animals immediately shot to number one. However, some hardcore fans from the Antichrist Superstar days weren't thrilled with the new direction, complained about the album sounding too polished, and accused Manson of selling out. But Manson didn't care. He had already proven he could shock and scare the world. Now he wanted to show that he could confound it too. Reinvention was Manson's drug of choice. Every era, he shed his skin and came back louder, uglier, or stranger. Whatever it took to stay one step ahead of both his fans and haters. And every time he morphed, he left another scar on pop culture. On April 20th, 1999, two teenagers turned an ordinary school day into a nightmare.
They wore black trench coats, combat boots, and some wore Nazi crosses. They hated jocks, loved the internet, and were fascinated by World War II.
Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold walked into Columbine High School in Colorado, armed with a pump-action shotgun, a semi-automatic handgun, a sawn-off shotgun, and a carbine 9mm rifle. And at exactly 11:19, they opened fire. Fifteen lives were lost, including their own, and more than two dozen others were injured in one of the darkest days in U.S. history.
The two gunmen who went on the rampage booby-trapped the building and even themselves.
Instead of addressing the real problems, like kids being bullied, feeling isolated, struggling with mental health, and having access to guns, politicians and the press searched for a quick villain and blamed Marilyn Manson, the rock star all parents already hated anyway.
I definitely can see why they would pick me, because I think it's easy to throw my face on a TV because I'm, in the end, sort of a poster boy for fear, because I represent what everyone's afraid of, because I do and say what I want.
Headlines claimed the killers were diehard fans of his music.
Are huge Marilyn Manson fans. Accused murderers have said Marilyn Manson's music touches something dark in them.
When Columbine happened, though, you know you're going to be somehow involved.
Before they were shown anything, they said a gang of kids wearing Marilyn Manson t-shirts shot up a school or something live on Fox, and I was saying, oh, this is why, you know. So now I think that I've been blamed for about 36 school shootings.
Manson denies it, but there is no denying that he is a strange and some say disturbing force in the pop world.
On Fox News, Bill O'Reilly branded Manson one of the most corrupting influences in U.S. history.
Never before in the history of this country have so many corrupting influences descended upon children at one time. Sure. And that most children don't understand what you're doing and why you're using the F word and why you're acting bizarre. And this can be very, very troubling to children who don't have direction, who don't have responsible parents.
The media hounded Manson like vultures, treating him as if his music had pulled the trigger instead of addressing the deeper issues at play.
If you were to talk directly to the kids at Columbine or the people in that community, what would you say to them if they were here right now?
I wouldn't say a single word to them. I would listen to what they have to say, and that's what no one did.
When you have things like Columbine and you have these kids that are angry and they have something to say and no one's listening, the media sends a message that if you do something loud enough and it gets our attention, then you will be famous for it. Those kids ended up on the cover of Time magazine. The media gave them exactly what they wanted. And that's why I never did any interviews when that happened, when I was getting blamed for it, because I felt that I would be contributing to what I found to be reprehensible.
Surprise, surprise, it later came out that neither Dylan Klebold nor Eric Harris even liked Manson's music.
The kids weren't even fans of me. I think they probably thought that I was too much of a sissy because I was wearing lipstick. I don't really know. I don't know what's going on with them.
Well, you must have got a bad rap from that.
Yeah, it kind of put my whole career on hold.
Manson poured his rage and disillusionment into a new record, Holy Wood. This was his manifesto, a ferocious rebuttal to every TV preacher and politician who had pointed a finger at him. Hollywood also tied together what Manson considered a loose trilogy of concept albums. The story runs backwards. Hollywood is the beginning, set in a dystopian America obsessed with guns, God, and celebrity. Mechanical Animals is the middle, where the protagonist drowns himself in drugs, sex, and hollow fame. And Antichrist Superstar is the end, where he transforms into a fascistic destroyer and burns it all down. Taken together, the trilogy was Manson's twisted rock opera about how America manufactures its own monsters, then crucifies them when convenient. The lyrics of Hollywood drew on some of America's most haunting images, like JFK's assassination, the death of his son, and obviously the shadow of Columbine. Manson mashed it all into a savage takedown of a culture that worships celebrities, then tears them apart for sport. Critics called it one of his best albums, and it went gold. But by the turn of the millennium, the culture that once feared Manson now thought he was overexposed and started to get bored with him. The same teens who used to paint their nails like him were now wearing baggy jeans and throwing themselves into mosh pits with Korn, Limp Bizkit, and Linkin Park. But none of those bands caused outrage on Manson's level, so that spotlight had now shifted to Eminem, the new, undisputed king of controversy. In short, Manson had gone from the center of America's fears to just another name in a busy, fast-moving entertainment machine. In 2003, Manson dropped The Golden Age of Grotesque, a sleazy, high-gloss mashup of Berlin's 1920s cabaret and pounding industrial metal. He compared himself to the so-called degenerate art, once banned in Nazi Germany. If America wanted him branded as filth, he'd wear it like a crown.
That's really kind of the definition of grotesque, something that doesn't exist in nature. You know, over the years, people have twisted into something else. So that's part of what the album is about.
The record opened at number one, but sales quickly dropped off. By then, shocking the public with music was pretty much impossible. Thanks to the internet, people could find crazier stuff online with just a click. However, amid the headlines, it's easy to miss that Marilyn Manson was not just a one-dimensional provocateur. Beneath the makeup and media frenzy was a very intelligent, eloquent, and surprisingly self-aware person. Most importantly, he was the last time rock music true.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Truly felt like a national threat. Yes, before him, rock and roll had its villains like Elvis shaking his hips, Jim Morrison dropping his pants, or Alice Cooper hanging himself on stage. But by the 90s, the genre was mostly sanitized, MTV packaged and radio friendly. Then Manson stormed in, and suddenly teenagers were sneaking his CDs into their bedrooms while their parents were calling school board meetings in panic about the Antichrist. He wasn't just offensive lyrics or loud guitars. He became a cultural panic, a figure that lawmakers condemned, churches picketed, and TV pundits blamed for violence in schools. No rock band since has managed to terrify the establishment on that scale. He was the final rock star and the closing chapter of an era when rock actually felt dangerous.
We will no longer be oppressed by the fascism of Christianity.
I don't know whether you all know, but Marilyn is one hell of a great artist, and we do happen to own a couple of his paintings.
Yes.
And you have art shows everywhere, and he's a most sought-after artist.
As Manson's shock value declined, he also explored other outlets like acting, painting, and a public love life that tabloids followed closely. And in 2005, he married burlesque star Dita Von Teese. 2 years later, however, their marriage crashed, wrecked by drugs and Manson's affair with actress Evan Rachel Wood, who, should be noted, was only 18 when he started seeing her, while he was 36. In the late 2000s and 2010s, Manson kept producing music with mixed results, and surely without the same shockwaves as his early career. While I won't go into every single album he released, I think it's important to mention that eventually he went independent, and in 2015 released The Pale Emperor, an album that was mostly received as a real comeback. Dark, bluesy, and more cinematic. Critics said it sounded like Manson rising from his own ashes. By then, in his late 40s, he appeared seemingly calmer and happier than ever. However, things would soon change for the worse. Just when it seemed Marilyn Manson was about to be regaining momentum, releasing new music, making television appearances, and even being cited as an influence by younger artists, the Me Too movement hit him like a freight train, and the reckoning was brutal.
Rock star Marilyn Manson is under investigation by the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department for alleged domestic violence. Now, we've been hearing stories.
The biggest shock of Manson's career wasn't a stage stunt or an album. It was the moment several women from his past came forward with disturbing allegations that the real Brian Warner was far more sinister than his stage persona. This started in February 2021, when actress Evan Rachel Wood publicly accused Manson of grooming her, manipulating her, and horrifically abusing her over the course of their relationship.
I guess I was like, I was a young teenage girl who idolized the music industry. And then like the first night, it just hit me like a ton of bricks that this was not what I thought it was going to be at all. And I got scared almost right away that I was in way over my head. But at that point, I had taken so much media abuse and I had put myself on the line to be in this relationship with this person in this very controversial way because I thought I was in love. And then when I started to see it sort of crumble and when he started hurting me and when it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, I was really in such denial and in too much shame to admit to myself that maybe I'd gone down the wrong path.
She was soon joined by other women who all issued statements accusing Manson of various forms of physical and psychological abuse. The allegations were horrible. Locking women in small spaces as punishment, forced drug taking, sleep deprivation, violent assaults. Essentially, painting Manson as a real-life sadistic monster.
Rocker Marilyn Manson was just dropped by his record label after Evan Rachel Wood accused her ex-fiance of abuse. Wood said she was manipulated.
The fallout was immediate, and Manson's record label dropped him that very week. His longtime manager and booking agent ditched him. TV shows like American Gods and Creepshow, which had episodes featuring Manson, cut ties and removed his appearances. It was a total rapid cancellation in the court of public opinion. Manson vehemently denied the allegations. He issued a statement calling the claims horrible distortions of reality and insisted all his intimate relationships were entirely consensual.
It's a different time. There was a lot of crazy shit that clearly happened or allegedly happened.
And a lot that didn't.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I go by what I know, and what I know, and the way he was to us was very respectful. He was always acted very appropriately, whatever, and all I know is
there were
women waiting to get on his tour bus, begging to get on the tour bus, and my whole thing is, what did you think he was going to do, show you his stamp collection?
That's a good point.
You know, what was he going to do,
teach you to knit? He might have a good stamp collection, how do you know?
No, but what were they going to do, crochet on the bus?
His ex-wife, Dita Von Teese, supported him in a carefully worded way. She said that the details made public did not match her personal experience with Manson. Rose McGowan, another former fiancé, also said he was never abusive with her. In the months that followed, more than a dozen women ultimately came out with various accusations spanning from physical assault to psychological torment. One was actress Esme Bianco, known from Game of Thrones, who sued Manson alleging he had brought her to the U.S. under false pretenses of work to then do horrible things to her.
She says that he starves her, that she is sleep deprived and so forth. But when you actually look into what she's actually saying, what she's saying is that he supplied her, they did a lot of cocaine. So basically, they stayed up for 4 days. They did a lot of cocaine. She didn't eat very much, okay? She didn't sleep very much because she was doing a lot of cocaine, all right? And so, you know, you have to understand that the way that she is slanting these things in her interviews and also in the lawsuit that just came out, it's designed to make you think that this guy has this woman like locked up, and he's like refusing to give her food, and he's putting drugs in her drink, and she doesn't know it. No, what this is she gets there, and he's like, "Hey, we're gonna do this movie. Let's do a bunch of coke. Let's have some fun." And he likes coke. He's doing coke too. It's not just he's just feeding it to her to incapacitate her.
Another was Ashley Morgan Smithline, who detailed harrowing abuse.
There was always people there at the house. As people started to trickle out, I was always like looking to his assistant, who's a friend of mine still, Ashley. And we would look at each other like, it's gonna get bad. You know, like as soon as everyone starts leaving, he turns off the charm and the monster would come out.
Manson's former assistant, Ashley Walters, also sued, claiming she had been subjected to his controlling and violent behavior.
She says that their professional relationship ended euphemistically. That's very euphemistic. Instead of saying what I think she meant is that I got fired. Okay. And so I think that she was fired probably for incompetence. Who knows? But she prefers to say that they parted ways. Our professional relationship ended. And she says that he has threatened her financial security. Now, what does that mean? Does Marilyn Manson actually have some kind of control over his personal assistant's financial security? I guess what she means is he fired her. Yes, when you're fired, I guess it does damage your financial security. These kinds of like dramatic statements, overstatements, these weird comments in her Instagram statement against him. And by the way,
the suits described a pattern. Manson would charm young women, pull them into his orbit, then dominate and abuse them while keeping them isolated.
He cut me off from my close friends and family one by one by exhibiting rage in some form or another when I was in contact with them. The only way I knew how to calm him was to give him what he wanted, which was me all to himself in total isolation. He had bouts of extreme jealousy, which would often result...
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam. A charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
And him wrecking our home, cornering me in a room and threatening me. I witnessed my abuser threatening people with force or legal action if he worried they would expose him. He bragged about being able to have people killed because he was allegedly friends with multiple gangs, and I watched him illegally collect data on people that he could use as blackmail. By the time I realized I was in a bad situation, I felt completely trapped and terrified for my life. He gifted me a cell phone, which I found out he was monitoring. He downloaded spyware onto my computer and hacked into my emails and social media accounts so I could not reach out for help. When my friends and family tried to intervene, I swiftly told them to leave because I was afraid of what he would do. He broke me down through means of starvation, sleep deprivation, and threats against my life, sometimes with deadly weapons, which would result in me having severe panic attacks where I was unable to breathe or stop shaking. Sometimes he would not allow me to sleep until I participated in acts of fear, pain, torture, and humiliation, which I felt powerless to stop.
Manson's legal team fought back hard. They labeled the claims untrue and meritless and accused the women of conspiring and fine-tuning their stories together to take him down. In a surprising but telling twist, Smithline later recanted her accusations entirely and in 2023 filed a new statement, asserting that she had been manipulated by Evan Rachel Wood into falsely accusing Manson.
Ashley Smithline is now claiming that Evan Rachel Wood coerced her testimony, influenced her, convinced her to lie, and she uses that term explicitly. She's coming out recanting, apologizing, saying, no, actually, none of this ever happened. He made me feel uncomfortable, and then I decided to lash out at him because I was encouraged to do so by this other individual who sued him in the first place. What happens is that you get one person claiming person A did X, Y, and Z. And they're in a weak moment. They start getting dogpiled immediately by the Me Too clout chasers. So in Manson's case, for instance, he was dropped by his record label. He was dropped by a TV show he was part of. He's getting lambasted. He's having to shell out money to fight this initial legal case. Other people that simply don't like that individual have taken advantage of the Me Too thing to dovetail their own grievances, make salacious claims, and in some cases are encouraged to do so by those original claimants as part of effectively a jihad attack on that person's character.
Manson went on the offensive too, filing a defamation lawsuit in 2022 against Evan Rachel Wood and her partner Ilma Gore.
In the 10 years after they split, Wood never once accused Warner of abuse. That is until she met Gore, a grifter, who understands that an organized attack on Warner, spearheaded by Wood's own fabricated revelations of R&A, could benefit them both. Wood could be rebranded from someone who still might be best known for dating Marilyn Manson a decade ago into an outspoken standard bearer for victims of domestic violence, or SA, thereby absolving her reputation for having a wild past and her embarrassment for having been in a long-term relationship with Manson.
In that suit, he accused Wood and Gore of basically conspiring to ruin his life, forging an FBI letter to make it look like he was under federal investigation, recruiting other women to accuse him, hacking his computer, and even swatting him by calling the cops with a fake emergency at his home.
In addition to faking a actual FBI agent's email, creating checklists of things they want people to come forward and allege, holy shit. They get former employees to give logins and passwords. They hack phones and computers and emails and social media accounts. they set up fake email accounts and fake illicit porno messages and swatting him. Wow. Holy shit. Okay, we're in the realm of if any of this is true, this is a really, really, really bad thing for Evan and her partner. Wow.
You have got to have the worst, most unbelievable story if you accuse Marilyn Manson of being a psycho and the general population's like, you're full of it. I don't buy it. There's no way. You've made Marilyn Manson look like the sane, rational party in this. That is tough to do. That's PR that he wishes he could have got 20 years ago when they were blaming him for Columbine and all that crap.
However, Wood and Gore filed anti-slap motions, a legal move to strike suits that target free speech, and a judge dismissed chunks of Manson's claims and ordered him to pay nearly $500,000 of their legal fees. By late 2024, Manson had quietly settled some suits out of court and dropped his defamation lawsuit.
Developing news tonight, the LA County Sheriff's Department is investigating rock star Marilyn Manson following domestic...
Meanwhile, a parallel criminal investigation was looming. The Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department had actually opened a criminal probe into Manson in 2021, interviewing accusers and gathering evidence of possible crimes. Ultimately, in early 2025, the current district attorney announced they would not be filing any criminal charges, as they didn't find evidence strong enough to effectively prove Manson had committed the crimes he was accused of. But public opinion remains divided. To some former fans, the flood of allegations was enough to cancel Marilyn Manson forever. To others, the lack of criminal charges and the collapse of some accusers' stories validated Manson's claims that this was more witch hunt than reality. Manson himself has kept a relatively low profile through the legal saga. It's a strange coda for a man who built a career out of shocking society. So, where does that leave Marilyn Manson today? Remarkably, after all the storms, he's still standing, a bit battered but unbowed. In 2024, Manson began tiptoeing back into public life. He announced a co-headlining arena tour with fellow hard rockers, Five Finger Death Punch, of all things.
So I was really curious to see what these new shows for Manson would look like, and he came out looking really healthy and putting on great shows. And that's
on the tour's opening day in August 2024, Manson even dropped a surprise new single titled As Sick as the Secrets Within, which was his first fresh music in 4 years. And a couple weeks later, another new song, Raise the Red Flag, followed. For some, the chance to see the goth icon live again was irresistible, while others protested venues, urging cancellations due to the dark cloud of the abuse allegations. Nonetheless, the tour went on and Manson released One Assassination Under God. Musically, it's impressive, some of his best work, and arguably one of the standout albums of 2024. The opening track, One Assassination Under God, takes aim at the people who lined up to watch him burn, but wouldn't admit they'd ever cheered him on. Everybody showed up for the execution, but nobody would show their face. On Nod If You Understand, he doubles down. Look at yourself for someone to blame. You're the only one who should be ashamed. He points the finger back at his accusers and slams the door on anyone who turned their back. On Raise the Red Flag, he growls, I don't give a fuck if you say you're sorry. I won't accept your surrender. The theme continues in Meet Me in Purgatory, where he asks his audience directly if they still support him. It's a moment reminiscent of Kendrick Lamar's Mortal Man, when Kendrick asked his listeners, if shit hits the fan, Is you still a fan? Time will tell if Manson will ever have a real mainstream comeback or not. But his legacy is already set. His image, white face, smeared lipstick, eerie contact lenses, is burned into pop culture forever. He was the last rock star who actually terrified America, and nobody's stepped into that role since. Today, rock doesn't shock anymore. Parents don't care, and the internet shows far worse. But there was a time when Marilyn Manson just walking into a room was enough to freak people out. Was he a misunderstood provocateur, or just as rotten as his harshest critics claimed? Each person will reach their own conclusion. What's certain is that he turned the villain role into art.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam. A charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Brian Warner built Manson as armor, a monster to scream back at a world he despised. But over time, he wore it so completely that it became impossible to tell where Brian ends and Marilyn begins. And perhaps that's the real tragedy in his story. He didn't shy away from the ugly parts of human nature. He fully embraced them, made them part of the show, and forced the rest of us to confront them too. He twisted himself into something grotesque on purpose, just to remind us that flaws are built into being human. And he did it so convincingly that even now people don't know whether to admire him or hate him anymore.